Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Ayla's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Glad to have you along on this Thursday. I hope your week is going quite well. Looking forward to another fun show today. Andy Staples from On Three National Writer will join us. We'll talk some football. Bob Kravitz will be along as well. I'm sure we're going to talk some Pacers as more surprises in the NBA. Celtics? Ooh. Celtics and the Cavs, the top two seeds in a little bit of trouble. Yes. Roster limits, still the final hurdle for the House Committee settlement. Mike Whitson takes a job. Been talking about that herd. It's been floating around for a few days, but I think that is official now. Akron, not allowed to play in a bowl game. For those of you wondering if college still matters or not, it does. Akron will not be able to play in a bowl game this upcoming season because of academic issues, because their multi-year academic progress rate score has dropped. The NCAA this week updated its national APR database with the latest scores of member institutions. Akron had a score of 914 below the 930 minimum for postseason eligibility, and therefore they will not be playing in the postseason. Akron's 4-8 record last season under third-year coach Joe Moorhead was its best since posting the same mark in 2018, so it's not like they were on their way to any bowls. But speaking of APR scores, where's Indiana in the Big Ten, you wonder? Well, we'll get to that. Who's last in the Big Ten? A little surprising. I think it was Oregon when I was first pulled it up. Yeah. Oregon, dead last in the Big Ten, and the APR, their APR score. Now, it's 942. It's not like it's terrible, but they're at the back, right in front of them in 17th, Penn State. But I'm not going to go through all of them, but Indiana comes in at number six, if you're wondering. Pretty not too bad. You're in the top six of an 18-team conference, followed by or preceded by Wisconsin, Minnesota, Northwestern, as you would understand, Michigan number two, and the national champion Buckeyes number one. A little surprising, but yeah, hey, there you go. So it does matter. You still have to go to class, man. They are keeping track of it. So, how's everybody doing? Welcome aboard. Glad to have you. Looking forward to talking to Andy Staples today, one of On Three's national football writers. As Indiana continues to pull in the recruits. Man, it's been Peebo talking, sees Leo Curtis to Nebraska. Yeah, when you see that, you wonder, okay, how does Indiana not land a guy over Nebraska if they were going for that? I'm not sure how that worked out. And there's a lot of facets to that, a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Not going to guess at it until we know more. But in the NBA, Oklahoma City lost their first game to Denver in this series. They go down 0-1, which was a shock to everybody. Yeah, they got back to reality last night. 149-106. Yeah, beat down. Now, no surprise there, so we won't spend a lot of time there. But how about the Celtics, the number two seed? You got the number one seed right now, the Cleveland Cavs. They're down 0-2 to the Pacers with two games coming up in Indianapolis. Celtics also down 2-0 to the Knicks. Man, wouldn't that be something to see the Knicks and the Pacers back in the conference finals? You want to talk about going back in the old days, baby, restarting a great rivalry. That would be incredible to see, because both of those teams and programs are striving to get back someplace where they have long, used to roost. But right now it looks pretty good, but you got a long way to go. Not as far as the Pacers. I think the Pacers are going to win the series, but I don't think it's going to be a walkover. I don't know that they're going to be able to sweep Cleveland. Cleveland's not going to just roll away. And Boston's not just going to go anywhere. Although, you're down 2-0, man. You're in a little bit of hurt. You've lost home court advantage. So you're going to have to do more on the road, which it's not impossible. Happens all the time. We see it. I mentioned Mike Woodson joining Doug Christie on the Sacramento Kings staff. Why is he still coaching? I really don't know. At his age, and it he just seems like he likes to just move slowly. And man, he's 64 years old, going to be 65, and it's not about age. I get it. But why not just chill? But oh well, I get it, man. If that's what you want to do, hey, do it. And if you can get that gig, go after it. Let's see. Yeah, and the house settlement, that is still the holdup there. Revisions have been made. Attorneys filed revisions to the House versus NCAA settlement yesterday that would allow college athletic departments to exceed the settlement's proposed roster limits through voluntary grandfathering of any athletes who were previously assured a roster spot, i.e. walk-ons, et cetera, because the let's just take the college basketball roster size of that was 13, but you had, I think, an unlimited amount of walk-ons if you wanted. Football, you got in a similar situation, and now they're wanting to limit those roster sizes, period, and with implications if you, depending on where you end up. But according to the revised proposal, any athlete who has been or would have been cut as a result of the settlement can be grandfathered in, meaning those athletes will not count against the settlement's roster limits for the duration of their college eligibility. That includes incoming freshmen for the academic year who had a previously offered spot revoked due to the settlement preparations. Any decisions to retain those impacted athletes would be made at the discretion of the individual schools, but the revisions allows for grandfathered athletes to maintain that status, even if they transfer to a different school. So, does that mean you're going to see walk-ons this year? I don't know, because it depends on the individual. they know that their spot is going to be going. Well, it's not really going to be going away. They'll have it as long as they're academically eligible and able to fulfill it. So that'll be interesting to see how, who does what, which teams do what. Do you add, or do you try to get used to it now? Because you're going to have to get accustomed to it. So do you rather, do you have the extra bodies for practice? It's, those are going to be under each coach's decision, and they got plenty to deal with as it is. And so now they're having to make this decision, but this settlement has been in the works for a year with Division I athletic departments planning accordingly, including preps for roster limits put forth by the NCAA and Power Conference defendants. The limits would increase the number of available scholarship opportunities across sports, but have also led to non-scholarship athletes, i.e. walk-ons, and some partial scholarships to lose their roster spots as a result. Now, there are sports like baseball that have partial scholarships and others. Actually, you can have a partial scholarship in anything, I believe. In Wednesday's filing, defendant lawyers representing the NCAA and Power Conferences wrote that although retention would be voluntary for the schools, the revised proposal ensures all athletes will be getting what they had before the settlement was announced, the opportunity to be on a roster without being subject to roster limits. So how does that actually end up impacting? We'll have to wait and see. A lot of guys may have already decided to not go forward with it. It's everything's up in the air. We don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But that's what we'll do. Hope everybody is doing well. What are your thoughts on that? Boy, Indiana football continuing to pull in the recruits. Looking forward to talking to Andy Staples today. He's one of the national writers for On3, who keeps up with everything, everybody. And we'll get an indication of where does Indiana looking like from a national standpoint. I know that they are still going to be viewed from last season. And while they had a great season, that end of the season taste is in the mouth of a lot of national pundits, although it should have been, should not have been. They should have been able to see that, you know what, this is kind of how the playoffs ended up going. But Indiana has shored up some of those spots. We'll talk to Andy about that as well. Thanks for everybody joining us on the Andy Mora Hotline. And hope everything is going well for you on this day, no matter where or how you're listening. Great affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville. The voice of the region, 104.7 FM, 1230 AM. WJOB in Hammond, Chicago, and on Fort Wayne's only sports station, Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked where you got it right there. You're going to have great content all day long, man. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy Staples from On3 will join us. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Thursday. I'm glad to have you along, and more glad to have Andy Staples along from On3, one of the national writers. And I forgot to look up your exact title, Andy, because I know there's different titles.
You don't need to get caught up in titles, Jim. I cover college football. It's the weirdest job in the world.
That you do, and extraordinarily as well, I might add. But I know some guys are more specific.
Oh, they get hung up on that. I remember working at some places where, you know, you get the senior writer title, which is a fancy way of saying we're not going to give you a raise this year. But people got real caught up in that. Like, I got to be a senior writer. I'm like, I don't think I was ever a junior writer. They didn't call me that. So what's the difference? The only title that matters is the one that comes in the direct deposit every other Friday.
Man after my own heart. Absolutely. What part of the country are you from?
I'm in Gainesville, Florida, and I had born in South Carolina, but moved to Florida when I was seven, and I've lived in Florida most of my life.
Do you know our good friend Kevin Brockway?
Of course I know K-Bro. Oh, yeah. Covered a lot of things. Sung some karaoke with him. Watched him
dance
shirtless at a bar in Minneapolis in 2006 while covering the Gators in the national title run.
I could have gone all day long without that vision in my head. Come on, man.
Well, hey, so you know Kevin has an angelic voice and loves his karaoke. You know what his karaoke song of choice is? It is Scenes from an Italian Restaurant by Billy Joel, which... Oh, really? It's like 11 minutes long.
Oh, my God. Thank God I have not had to witness that. K-Bro is a former regular guest. I think we gave him the name K-Bro.
I've been calling him K-Bro since about 2004. And he's got, you know, he embraces it.
I tell you something you don't have, though. You don't have... That, baby.
No, look at that. That is tremendous.
Yeah, baby. That is, he loves that. Not really.
You're going to have to send me that. I'm going to need that because the next time I see him, I might have it printed on a t-shirt.
Oh my God. That would be incredible. He's a great friend of the show. Great dude. Love him. Great guy, great reporter as well. He used to be on the IU beat before he moved back down to Florida for Gainesville. But appreciate you taking the time to join us, man. I know you are locked in, and there is so much going on. I was just talking about the house settlement still kind of being hung up on the roster limit size, and how, you know, that probably football teams are a lot more involved with that than most other sports, because you're talking difference between 85 and however many.
It's between 105 and about 120 or so, and it's really, this doesn't need to be that complicated. If you had a roster spot, you're grandfathered in, and then when you graduate, it goes down, that spot goes away, and you go to 105. Like, it's so amazing to me that the schools keep digging their heels in on stupid stuff like this. Like, they can't afford for this to go to trial. This is an extinction event for the NCAA if it goes to trial. They need the settlement to go through. So just quit being jerks about it. Like, let the walk-ons be. Stop worrying about it and get it over with.
I would think you would want the walk-ons as long as you can have them just for bodies.
Yeah, well, exactly. And there's other ways. Like, there are already people trying to figure out other ways to have walk-ons. I'm a former walk-on myself. I was a walk-on offensive lineman at Florida. I was not one of the ones that would have made the 105. Like, they would not have kept me. And how do you do that? I think there has to be a mechanism for guys to...
Rudy?
I was probably worse than Rudy. Like, at least Rudy got in a game. So...
Well, you know, it's the effort. A little something for the effort, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's what I tell most people. I'm like, look, I was pretty terrible compared to the first-round draft picks I had to block on scout team, but I was probably better than you.
Yeah, and when was this?
So my freshman year was 1996. That would be the year that Florida won its first national title.
I was kind of figuring that's what about when it was going to be. That's where I was going with that. It's not exactly like you were going up against Joe Schmoes. They probably had
It was Javon Kearse. So
yeah, exactly. So I kind of had an idea that was going to be the case. And now we've got this, the transfer portal, NIL, and more so the transfer portal. The transfer portal to me has just been a leveler of this game of all of
yep. It's crazy general, to me because, like, you've got Nick Saban on this presidential commission, and he's saying that he's trying to restore competitive equity. There's more competitive equity now because of this stuff. What Saban wants to restore is Alabama being able to dominate again.
Yes.
And, like, schools like Indiana have taken great advantage of this, and it's not just Indiana. It's but the problem is, it doesn't help, say, West Virginia. It doesn't help, you know, schools in the Big 12. It doesn't help schools in the Sun Belt. But schools in the Big 10 and the SEC, they got huge advantages from stuff like this, where they can get better fast.
Yeah, and as you saw, Indiana, not just fast, but first ever. I mean, Indiana has never had a team program like they did last season and will again this season.
As yeah, they're going to be good again. I have faith in Coach Siggs to keep them good. I don't know if it's going to be 11-1 good, but they're going to be good.
Yeah, I think the team is actually going to be a better team, but I don't know because of their ramped up schedule. That
although this is what we talked about a lot during the season last year. If we'd told you this time last year that Indiana's schedule would be considered easy, you'd have laughed because they had to play the two teams that played for the national title the year before. It's just that Washington and Michigan were rebuilding.
Yeah, exactly. And it was not expected to be that way. And to get to say you beat the two teams that played in the previous national championship game, and this season you lost to the two teams that played in this season's national championship game.
Right.
Not too many teams can say that, I don't think.
No. Yeah. Their only two losses were to the teams that played the national championship game.
And the thing I've seen here of late, though, is I was wondering when the recruiting was really going to kick in, not the portal, but recruiting. And because that's still going to be a basis. And Kurt Cignetti and staff have been landing commitments, 25 and 26 guys, or 26 guys, even some 27 guys. And I'm like, wow, now that is a difference maker. They just landed the top recruit in the state. They've got another one up, that Kashmir Hicks. They've got another one that is heading their way, probably. They were not the first option within the state of Indiana, even. Purdue was ahead of Indiana. And Indiana has at least moved ahead of Purdue. Now you've got Notre Dame here, but you also have the Ohio States and Michigans and these guys that really poach the five-star talent that comes out of this
state. Well, and especially now, people are not as tied to geography as they used to be. So if you have a great player who's say from Indianapolis, they're probably not just looking in the Midwest. You know, there's a lot of places they can go. I mean, even just within a 5-hour drive, you bring in a bunch of SEC schools, you know, you got other elite Big Ten programs, and it becomes a pretty rough go of it if you're trying to keep the best players home.
Absolutely. And not that Indiana produces a ton of elite talent, but they produce some. And
hey, I'm just trying to figure out how y'all let Rex Grossman get out of Bloomington.
You know what? There's that one. And there's been others. There's been others. But he's from Santa Claus. At least they didn't let the latest basketball player from Santa Claus get out.
I was going to say, Rex Grossman. Jay Cutler's from Santa Claus too, right?
Or Jay Cutler rather was from Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. Yeah, Rex is from Bloomington.
From Bloomington, yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Jay Cutler. What I was thinking. I was like, man, yeah, there's been others. But that's because there was no program. There was no semblance. Not only was there no semblance of a program, it was to the point to where you don't even have it to where a guy says, you know what, I can be that guy. I can help turn it. No,
I thought Tom Allen had a pretty good, idea and executed it all right for a couple of years, but it just couldn't sustain. Cignetti's going to be interesting to watch because everywhere he's been, he has sustained it. You know, he sustained it at the FCS level, and he gets to James Madison, and they jump from FCS to FBS and stay just as good. So I think he's got the formula that he knows will work. And I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see Fernando Mendoza playing quarterback for Indiana because I remember that the last game he played at Cal, getting bowl eligible and the interview he gave after that. And you're like, oh yeah, that'd be a dude everybody would want to play with. So I think it's gonna be fun to watch because you look at the formula they used, which was go get guys who were experienced, who'd played a lot of games, who'd been good at the college level, even if it wasn't at the Big Ten level necessarily, and you put them together, and guess what? Guys who are old, who've played a lot, tend to play well together.
Yeah, and now I wonder, Fernando had an outstanding year last year. He threw for over 3,000 yards, obviously, while getting sacked 41 times.
A lot, yeah. Yeah, their best back was hurt all year. So like that was a tough offense to play in, and he managed to do it pretty well.
And now with Indiana having a revamped offensive line, I'm not going to say that they're Ohio State, but they brought in the pieces. They brought in Pat Dugan from Notre Dame. They brought in some guys getting healthy again. I just think that this offense, along with Roman Hemby, Lee Beebe, get some other pieces in, the ones they already have. Yeah. I really think this offense can take a step up and do some of the things they couldn't do last year, and that was compete up front with the bigger teams, Penn State.
Well, and that's where they're going to be challenged, I think, in the Big Ten schedule, because I think, you know, it's the first part of that Big Ten schedule is the one that scares you. It's, you know, I think Illinois is going to be really good. They won 10 games last year. They bring back pretty much the core of that group. They lost their best receiver to the NFL, Pat Bryant, but then they took West Virginia's best receiver. And so you go Indiana, Iowa, Oregon. Those are the ones that are going to be the test right there. You're going to know what Indiana is. I'm sorry, Illinois, Iowa, Oregon. You're going to know what Indiana is by the, you know, second week of October.
They could legitimately be 3-3 then, and it would not be a shocker.
But they could be 3-3 then and finish the season 8-4. Like that's the crazy part about that. And if they're not 3-3, if they're 5-1, or if they're even if they're 4-2, you're looking at that going, okay, this could be another really good season. This could be a 9-win type season, depending on how things shake out.
I think that for Indiana to kind of get over or get to that next level, Iowa, Oregon, or Penn State need to win one of those Rose Bowl games.
I would agree with that.
Show that, hey, you know what? We're for real. Iowa's probably going to be the easiest one, and I don't like to use the word easy.
I tell you what, I think Iowa's going to be the scary one in the Big Ten this year. Because I think they're finally going to have competent quarterback play for the first time since C.J. Beathard. They got Mark Gronowski
from
South Dakota State. He was a Fighting Jackrabbit, Walter Payton Award winner in 2023, so the best player in the FCS. And yeah, I am fascinated by that, because I actually thought Iowa's defense took a little step back last year. Which, look, they've been carrying them for so long, like you can't expect them to be as dominant as they have been, but I have utmost faith in Phil Parker as a coordinator, so they're going to be fine. Their special teams are going to be great, as always, if they have competent quarterback play. And I thought the offense did get a little bit better with Tim Lester running it instead of Brian Ferentz. They are going to be the one everybody's freaking out about. They'll be like Indiana last year, where, oh, God, they're coming. You know, because sound exactly where they need to be every play, and now they've got a guy at quarterback who can distribute.
If it hadn't have been for Indiana becoming the story they became last year, Illinois would have gotten a lot more pub. Not that they were ignored, but they were just right there on that outside.
I feel like we didn't talk about them really that much until the bowl game, though. Like, they played South Carolina, and it was a weird situation, because most of those bowl games of that ilk, there's tons of opt-outs. Both teams had everybody playing. And Illinois wins that game, and you know, I thought played really well the whole time. And you're like, wow. So because we were looking at South Carolina as a team that was kind of on the rise and could come up and be a power in the SEC this year. Illinois is the same thing in the Big Ten with what they bring back.
And the Big Ten is, I think, it's going to be loaded this year. Obviously, Ohio State, you don't expect them to take much of a step back. Penn State, Michigan, you expect them to rebound from what they were.
I expect them to be able to complete a forward pass longer than 20 yards, which would be a huge difference from last year. Looking back, I really can't believe they won 8 games last year.
They had they didn't even really have an offense. It was like a playground offense, drawing up plays in the dirt. But just having the talent, I guess, they had helped them along the way. But looking at the Big Ten, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Iowa, Oregon, Indiana, just those top 6 teams alone is going to be a logjam at the top. At that, I don't know what USC going to be like. Who else is coming along? There are other teams that are even UCLA was getting better at the end of last season.
I'm glad somebody else noticed this. Like, if you watch that UCLA Iowa game on a Friday night, it's like, oh, I think they kind of know what their identity should be now. And I thought Deshaun Foster had a good plan in terms of long-term recruiting at UCLA, which obviously wasn't going to help them last year and probably isn't going to help them yet this year. But they've got Nico Iamaleava now at quarterback, so that should be an upgrade. I don't know how much of an upgrade it's going to be, but
yeah, I was going to say, is it?
Yeah, that's the question. A lot of revisionist history going on right now because we put out, my co-host and I, Ari Wasserman, put out our top 10 quarterbacks list, our top 10 returning quarterbacks list a few weeks ago, and I left Nico off mine. Now, I thought he was pretty close to the top 10, but I left him off. And the Tennessee fans were so mad at me. And then 2 days later, he's leaving. And they weren't mad at me anymore. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, all that stuff you said was right. I'm like,
yeah,
that's not what you said Wednesday. Like,
was Fernando in there?
No, Fernando was not. Fernando is Fernando could be pretty good, though. Here's the thing. There's a lot of really good returning quarterbacks this year. Like, if you go to the Big 12, half the Big 12 has a veteran established quarterback who had a great year last year. Like, it's going to be a lot of fun to see some of these guys, because, you know, we actually don't talk about the Jake Retzlaff from BYU and Josh Hoover from TCU and Rocco Beck from Iowa State. Like, those guys are all really good. But then you've got Lenore Sellers at South Carolina. You've got Luke Altmyer at Illinois. You've got DJ Lagway at Florida, who, you know, one of those guys you feel like just scratched the surface of what he could do as a freshman. So I'm very excited about this year in terms of quarterback play, because you've got all these guys that are coming back who were good or who are in a new place, like Fernando Mendoza. But you've also got these guys who are getting thrown into big jobs that we don't know anything about, like Julian Sain at Ohio State, like Bryce Underwood at Michigan. Like, what are they going to be? We have no idea, but they're going to have this intense pressure on them to produce immediately.
Yeah. Philip pointing out a couple of the returning quarterbacks, Drew Allar and Altmyer from Illinois, Indiana will be playing against both of those guys. That's going to be fun to see.
Drew Allar's got some guys to throw to now. Like, Tyler Warren was his only guy that he could throw to last year. Penn State was busy in the portal in terms of getting receivers, and they've got a young tight end that they like. So I actually think Allar theoretically should be much more dangerous this year than he was last year.
Is the Big Ten turning into a league that's going to be throwing the ball a lot more, because we're starting to see all these quarterbacks that are staying? Indiana, of course, is a team that's going to throw.
It's funny because everybody talks about the Big Ten as this ground and pound league. I don't really think it's been that for a long time. You know, you look at the really good Ohio State teams over the years, they weren't ground. Like, once Urban Meyer took over for Tressel, they weren't ground and pound. Now, Harbaugh kind of brought it back that direction with what he was doing in Michigan. But I also think that the elimination of divisions probably forces things to open up a little bit more, because I feel like the teams in the West, there was a formula. And it was the old Barry Alvarez, Kirk Ferentz formula of run the ball, play good defense, you can win the West. Well, there's no West to win anymore. You have to go win the whole thing. And I think, like, when Matt Rhule got the Nebraska job, you could see the wheels turning with him. Like, I can't play like this. Luke Fickell tried it and went completely the opposite direction from what Wisconsin had been. I think that was a mistake, but you see he's coming back toward the Barry Alvarez, but not going all the way to the Barry Alvarez this year. So
going to say, is he going to make it at Wisconsin?
I have no idea. I think he's too expensive to fire if things don't work out this year, but I think it would be a very tough situation, because if it doesn't get better, they're going to get really frustrated, and then they've got to deal with the fact that he's very expensive.
So Ohio State, is that the favorite in the Big Ten again this year?
Gosh, I don't know about that. I mean, they have to replace so much. It's crazy because they're replacing so much, but they also bring back the best defensive player in college football in Caleb Downs and the best offensive player in Jeremiah Smith. But they have to replace so much on both lines of scrimmage. We assume they're going to be good because they always recruit so well, but we don't know. Like, Penn State has a much more proven roster at this point. So I think Penn State is one you have to think of as a favorite. I think Oregon, just like last year, I mean, the Oregon's names and faces change, but Oregon, just like Ohio State, goes and gets what it needs. Like, they lose Josh Connerly, they go out and get Isaiah World, who was the number one offensive lineman in the portal. He was at Nevada, and this is a guy who's viewed as kind of a first round prospect, and so he plugs in at left tackle for Oregon. So they've all got mysteries. Like, are these receivers that Penn State got going to help? With Oregon, Dante Moore takes over as a starting quarterback. What's he going to do? Julian Sain at Ohio State, Bryce Underwood at Michigan. I think it's more open than people realize, because you just don't know how some of these young guys are going to play. I will say, though, if Penn State hit right on the portal receivers, Penn State would be the one I'd pick.
For Indiana, things are looking good for them. We'll have to guess what the offense, how successful they will be, but they seem to have the pieces defensively as well. They have added in some pieces where they lost, but they also have a three All-American anchor, starting with Mikhail Kamara on the line. You've got Aiden Fisher at linebacker and D'Angelo Pons in the backfield, all Americans. So a great three-leg anchor there, and they have added some pieces recently, and I think that they're looking at another linebacker from Maryland to hopefully pick up as well to complete that. So
poor Mike Locksley. They've just been picked apart.
I know it.
Wisconsin took their quarterback. Everybody else is taking other pieces. Like, that's the downside. We mentioned what you can do competitively with the transfer portal. That's the downside if you become the place everybody picks from.
What's up next for you?
Well, I got my show in about 6 minutes, so it's on the On3 Sports YouTube page and also wherever you get your podcasts afterwards. So when you guys get done listening to Jim, you just hop on over. And hit subscribe. It'll plug right into your phone.
Andy and Ari, right?
Andy and Ari, that's right.
Andy and Ari, make sure you reach out and tune into that as well when you're clicking in. Cannot thank you enough, Andy. Look forward to doing this again.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, sir. Andy Staples, On3 national football reporter and analyst. We've got more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. We're back with all of that and more following these beautiful, beautiful messages from our great sponsors, of which I hope you are supporting. Great places like Hard Truth. Stop by. And if you do, take a picture. Send it to me. Wherever else, whomever else that you're stopping by and visiting. Cheryl Sizemore, if you're looking for a home in the Indianapolis area, let me tell you, you'll find no one that will go to more links, greater links to help you than Cheryl. Personal service, I'm telling you, bar none, no one does it better. Back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios after this. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Well, I appreciate you. Man, that was a great conversation with Andy Staples. He is tuned in to what's going on across not only the Big Ten, but across college football in general. And just great conversation that we'll be able to have a lot more frequently now that those On3 guys, we can collaborate with them. Looking forward to that, because nobody breaks more stories than On3 does when it comes to recruiting and news. Speaking of which, you need to go, please go to thehoosier.com now with On3 and subscribe. They have a special right now, $1 for the first month and 50% off for the entire first year. You will, you'll be missing out you don't have that, but it is locked in, full of information, nonstop stories, multiple stories every day, and I would appreciate it. Help those guys out, because without subscribers, they can't provide the coverage that they do. And so go to thehoosier.com, get yourself a much, much discounted subscription, although it comes with all of the On3 information, which is incredible. I mean, it is chock full every day of new things that you can, that you learn that you never knew. Fun time with Andy. Looking forward to get Ari Wasserman on here as well at some point. We've had pretty much all of the big guys on so far, but there's more, and we'll get them. The Big Ten reached a $928 million in revenue for the fiscal year last year. Kevin Warren received a $5.7 million bonus. Are you kidding me? I'm like, wow. The Big Ten saw a 5.5% increase in total revenue during the fiscal year 2024, which I thought he was so long gone, according to tax documents obtained by USA Today. The conference's new media rights deal kicked in during that time. According to documents, the Big Ten generated nearly $1 billion in revenue, $928 million, which is an increase from $880 during the previous fiscal year. That means the conference distributed roughly $63.2 million to each of the 12 longest standing schools. That would include Indiana. And that's up from $60 million the previous fiscal year. Additionally, former Commissioner Kevin Warren received that $5.75 million bonus during the 23 calendar year, per the documents. During that year, Warren left to become the Chicago Bears president and CEO. And a Big Ten spokesman told USA Today, the bonus came from the Big Ten Council of Presidents and Counselors for his accomplishments over his full tenure as commissioner, including his contributions to the new TV rights deal. Give me a break. I mean, why don't you dock him for all the crap that he did? He was terrible. After Warren's departure, Tony Petitti took over as commissioner. During the 8 months he was on the conference payroll, he received a $2.65 million in compensation. Nice run for 8 months. Whew. That's like a baseball season, man. That's nothing for baseball, I guess, though. The compensation included a $500,000 bonus and prorated base pay. So there's where the money. Fiscal year 2024 marked the start of the Big Ten's lucrative media rights agreement, which is worth $7 billion over 7 years. So this is just the beginning. The conference continued its partnership with Fox while adding CBS and NBC and WNBC to the mix to create a weekly triple header. Fox has the early game as part of its Big Noon kickoff, which is that really do people care about the Big Noon kickoff? It's kind of early, right? Unless you're at home. I guess maybe if you're at home, the Big Ten took the SEC's coveted 3:30 spot window on CBS, which that's a big deal. After it signed the deal with ESPN, NBC then gets the prime time slot for its Big Ten Saturday night package of games. So you've got Fox at noon, you've got CBS in the afternoon, and NBC at night. CBS phased in its Big Ten coverage because it still had an arrangement in place with the SEC during the 2023 season. As a result, the Big Ten media deal didn't fully kick in until July of last year. So that money will probably go up a little bit. The additional revenue will be dispersed among more teams after groundbreaking round of conference realignment when you add Oregon, UCLA, USC, Washington, yada, 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 yada. So there's that. Texas Tech NIL Collective founder Cody Campbell to co-chair President Donald Trump College Sports Commission. Now, this is worrisome for me. Not for me, I guess, but I think it's worrisome. The government needs to step in, but I don't want Nick Saban does not belong on the does not need to be. He is a very, very biased, person, very SEC biased, very Alabama biased. He's complaining and whining because programs like his aren't dominating anymore, because I don't want to go into it, but when he, a few years ago, accused Jimbo Fisher of having the best payroll money could buy, Jimbo Fisher, who used to be an assistant to Nick Saban, quickly fired something back that shut Saban up. So everybody knows what had been going on in the SEC for years. So buck up, man. Quit whining. Their commissioner's is the biggest whiner in the country. Got to have everything. The SEC, it's the SEC. It's all about the SEC. Well, then you know what? Just have your own everything. Have your own national championship. Texas Tech Board of Chairman Cody Campbell will serve as the co-chair of President Donald Trump's College Sports Commission alongside Nick Saban. On Three's Pete Nackles reported, Campbell founded the Texas Tech Focus NIL Collective, the Matador Club. It's going to be very interesting to see how this goes. And yeah, you know, if good comes out of it, great. That's all that matters. That is all that matters. That is what you need. I just, Nick Saban just worries me. He has a lot of sway and he's biased. He's simply biased, but we'll see. Nick Saban has been outspoken about the need for regulation and national legislation when it comes to NIL and the current college athletics landscape. Cody Campbell also shared ideas for changes, notably with regard to media rights, starting with an amendment to the Sports Broadcasting Act of 1961. College sports, unlike pro sports, does not have the right to pool its media rights together and act as a singular seller to the media companies, Campbell said last month on Sirius. Because of that, the conferences compete with one another for media deals. That dynamic has caused them to get less money per viewer than the pro sports do. The NBA has about half as many viewers as college football, but they get twice as much money than college football does, which is crazy. And it's all because of the legal setup currently in place. Now, that makes sense. You've got the SEC, the Big Ten. They're not competing against, you know, ESPN is not bidding for the Big Ten. They're kind of, it's like, well, we've got these guys. So it will be interesting in the future. Do Big Ten groups of games go away? We'll talk more about that. Coach Griff will join us later. Bob Kravitz as well. We'll talk more about that. In addition to the Pesos and Indy 500 around the corner, we've got lots more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Thursday. Back with more right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Thursday. Glad to have you along for the ride. I am, as soon as the show ends, I am heading to Oxford, Mississippi for my daughter's graduation this weekend. Kylie graduates from Ole Miss Honors College graduation tonight, and I don't know what's going on tomorrow, and then another graduation on Saturday from regular school, I guess. But she's going to grad school there, so she's not even leaving. But that's a haul. 7.5-hour drive down there, man. Thank you, Five. I appreciate you, brother, very much so. Coach Griff joining us here in just a second. Donald, I was talking about the commission a minute ago on that he's putting together that will deal with NIL and all of that. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate you as well. Jason, a big IU football fan. Got tons of football today, Jason. President Donald Trump is also reportedly considering an executive order which would create more scrutiny around NIL, according to the Wall Street Journal. Now, that news came down after the president and Saban met ahead of last week's address. I wonder if Saban talked about paying players illegal. No, I guess he wouldn't have. Just kidding. News of president's plan to consider that executive order and form a commission, which is expected to have Nick Saban and Cody Campbell as co-chairs, come with a backdrop of the House versus NCAA settlement, which continues to go through its final approval process, as I spoke about earlier. Attorneys filed an updated brief yesterday, as I mentioned. Judge Claudia Wilkins concerns about roster limits. So that just, and like, let's get Coach in here. Coach, I was just talking about the potential Donald Trump's commission on sports and the changes that they're with NIL and all of that. But right now, the House settlement just being held up simply by roster limits. And I had Andy Staples on just a little bit ago from On Three, and he's like, you know, this is not this difficult, people. Why is it taking this long? And I agree. It's like, just say yes. I'm like, they're grandfathered in, just like it was last year. Just pretend this was last year. And then, except for you lose one class, next year you lose the second class, it's an easy deal. And I don't care if you're a walk-on. No, you don't get to ask for an extra stinking year. No, you don't get to ask for a redshirt year. No, you don't get to ask for a medical year. No, you get these years. That's it. It has gotten plumb ridiculous, and I'm not calling out anybody, but I'm just saying, guy, I was like, I wonder, has there been anybody that's been in college for 8 years? I wonder. I know seven.
Probably. Yeah. I was listening to you and Andy talk there. And first of all, you're talking in too much logical terms, and we don't, NCAA and things of this nature are not found on a logical scale, but yeah, you know, I think the aspect of eligibility, if they solve that, you get 5 years. Now, the only thing that I think is left for the potential is that medical clause that could potentially be something that a kid could, you know, file if he loses an entire year. But
not if he's a walk-on?
No. I was talking about just in general what they're talking about with this five-year plan, you know, five years of eligibility, and that's it. You know, there is no red shirt.
Oh.
5 years.
I was talking about the roster limit size.
Yeah, right.
And the guys that were former walk-ons, that is being done away with. But the goal now is to just those shrink that it. Were walk-ons last year or would have been a walk-on this year with eligibility. And let's say you would have been a sophomore walk-on this year. That would mean you'd have this year, you'd have next year, and the year after that.
Yes.
Period. But I don't think there should be any medical, any...
No, right.
None of that crap. You get the year, that's it. And I think that I don't understand why that should not just be approved.
Well, yeah. And, you know, we don't know the ins and outs of this topic to the extent of the NCAA's argument and the school's argument is that because they've been utilizing this 105 as a, you know, theoretical point, adding back in these unlimited roster aspects is going to cause issues. And I think issues means money. is what it is, what it comes down to with the
Does money have anything to do with this?
Oh, well, I don't know, but it, there seems to be a big issue
I'm
with
kidding.
It.
I'm kidding.
I know. I was trying to be sarcastic, but
man,
the logical thing is do a grandfather scenario that after so many years that phases out, you get to the 105 limit and that's it. And then you carry on from there. The NCAA is playing a dangerous game with this attorney in the sense that she could just nix the whole thing and says, we're going to trial. And then all of a sudden what we've been anticipating for the entire last year and such goes out the window. And now everybody's in limbo. You can't do this. You can't do this. The NCAA comes back in and enforces rules that were on the books, so forth and so on. And now you've got a quagmire. So it's the easiest thing is like you and Andy were discussing. It's the do the grandfather thing, get things in place and let it roll. In that regard, now you've got people talking about women's sports potentially suing the schools over not equally paying the women's sports out of this 20. No,
that's not going to fly though, because the men's basketball program is not being paid equally.
Yeah, all right.
But it's because it is not it's where the money comes from. Mm-hmm. And the money is not coming from women's basketball as much as people would like to think otherwise. It does not. There are very, very, very few women's programs that pay for themselves. And I've said this before, Indiana's own women's program does not pay for itself.
Yeah, it has to have the help of football and men's basketball.
And therefore, that's why and where the money will be going to. 75% will be going to football, probably 10% to men's basketball and 5% to women's mm-hmm. basketball. And they can sue all they want, but this has nothing to do with men, women, male, female, or Title IX.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I think it's going to ultimately blow up the Title IX clause anyway, and they're going to have to rethink some of this stuff because of all the things that are happening in women's athletics in general. But yeah, I think they're on a positive course. I just think they need to drop this issue with the roster deal and just cave to what the judge is wanting them to do, which is grandfather in things. And then,
but I think that they have. I think that the latest the attorneys filed a new brief yesterday that includes grandfathering provisions for roster limits.
Yeah, and then I think they'll get approved because that's what she wants.
Yeah, and so we should be on the way. Wilkins gave both sides 2 weeks to make the necessary changes, setting a deadline for Wednesday, which they got that in. And so plaintiff's attorney Jeffrey Kessler told On Three those athletes would be exempt from all roster limits for their entire careers. That includes current athletes cut for next year and high school seniors who were promised spots for next year. So this could be a guy, this could go on for 4 or 5 years. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, right. And I think what I think will ultimately happen with this is if a walk-on comes in and then leaves that roster spot, transfers, quits because they don't want to play anymore, then I think the schools will be able to say, okay, we're going to eliminate one of those 20 spots. So now you're only going to use 19.
Well, I think that spot may just disappear because that individual was grandfathered in, not a spot.
Right. So I don't think they can replace that spot is what I'm getting at, with the following year. But again, I think if they get this done, we can move forward. We've got this new president's commission that's coming into the fray. And for everything that people don't like the way Saban seems to be coming off, I think ultimately what he's trying to do is there's got to be some playground rules when it comes to NIL and, you know.
But what are those? And how is Saban going to be the guy that sets those guardrails?
Well, I don't think it's going to be Saban. I think they'll have this commission, and they'll have a group of former coaches and maybe some former players that will be able to provide insight and knowledge, and then make a presentation that ultimately the conference will either adopt or not adopt. Now, whether or not this can be a full-fledged legislative, you know, aspect of our government, who knows? As we know, when government gets into things, they tend to screw it up. But I know the lot of the concerns, even what Saban is using his platform to voice outwardly, are some of the same concerns that coaches have when it comes to the portal, when it comes to tampering, when it comes to, you know, a multitude of things, kids being able to jump in and out of a portal multiple times and so forth and so on.
To me, that's the bigger issue, is the portal. Yes. Because there is constant tampering, which is not considered tampering anymore.
No, not by...
If you've got an agent, you could never have a conversation with a kid, but have all the conversations that you need to have as far as getting someone. And it is just purely run amok.
And yeah, it's crazy right
now. NIL as badly as getting a handle on the transfer portal.
No question. And in that,
because if you get a handle on the transfer portal, I think that in itself will kind of help with NIL.
It will definitely help with all the concerns of other issues within that same conversation. You got agents that are coming in. They don't have to be licensed. They're shopping kids around. And that in itself is so bad that coaches don't have a control anymore, you know, or the institutions don't have any control. I'm not saying they have to have the total control, but you've got to be able to protect your investment in a kid, irregardless of anything else, because otherwise, like you and everybody else feels, it's a wild, wild west.
Which is what it has been and continues to be. We'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. It keeps on rolling. But Indiana football has continued rolling in the commitments, man. They continue to come in. I've been saying this for the last couple of days, very impressed with the job Coach Cignetti and staff have done recruiting for the future. Not portal guys, but recruiting. These guys, they've landed a ton.
Yeah, and I'm getting ready to do my breakdown of Trevor Gibbs, the young man tight end out of Crown Point that just committed yesterday to Indiana. And this kid is a player. I mean, watching him on film, you just look at him and say, gosh, this kid can play. Not only can play tight end, he's a really good linebacker. Now they're recruiting him as a tight end. And even at tight end, his blocking, his catching, all fits the categories of what you look for in terms of what Indiana likes to do offensively. So he's a Horton type of kid that can stick his hand in the ground, play at the point of attack, spread out, run routes, be a bona fide receiver. And, you know, this is the type of kid that's going to fit the offense the way they'd like to utilize the tight end in multiple positions. So he is a tremendous kid athletically. They beat Iowa on him as well as some other big time programs. So that, again, we've talked about this before, is keeping homegrown talent at home, and getting a kid out of the region isn't always an easy proposition, because they're more identified with Chicagoland in a metropolitan area than they are with the Indiana per se as a state. So I think they've done a tremendous job. I do think they're done in the portal. Now, if they can find that legit linebacker that they think they need, then they'll probably do something. But getting the wide receiver that they got from Cal, I mean, Mendoza's probably very happy, because he's already has built chemistry with Boyd. But that in itself, that pickup was critical because of losing Morris. So now you add that kid into the fray and your wide receiver room's back to that very talented group of guys that many as eight guys can play, and that's fine. You need them. And so they've added the pieces of the puzzle they needed. They're adding their foundational aspect of things with the recruiting class. So all you can say right now with recruiting is the plan that is being implemented, you can see, you can understand the plan and why they're doing what they're doing. And when you can see that vision from the outside looking in and understand it, you know that Indiana's on the right track when it comes to recruiting.
Yeah, you mentioned Gibbs a minute ago. This dude is a man. He is 6'4", 235 pounds, the number one linebacker in the state by On3. Although he would be playing tight end, that's the plan right now at Indiana. But man, that's the kind of guys that Indiana didn't used to get, and now they're getting those guys. And as you just talked about, the others as well. But that is hugely important, filling in those pieces with the in-state guys on top of the portal guys and guys that they can pull in from elsewhere.
Yeah, and, you know, I take the Gibbs kid, and he's very comparable to the Olinger kid. That's the linebacker they got out of Columbus, who is a four-star kid. Very good, very athletic, you know, very similar talent-wise. Olinger actually plays running back. He's a pretty good arm running back, and you can see the dynamics between the two. They both play offense, they both play defense, and they play both of their positions at a very high level. So you can see why they're very sought after type of recruits. So yeah, I just think everything is going the way it's envisioned to go. They're getting the transfers that out of the portal that have a proven productivity. And that is very important because they're instant plug and play, and you're getting the recruits in that athletically speaking fit a Big Ten roster.
Yeah, and more importantly, a Big Ten schedule, because Indiana is going to have that in spades next year. It's going to be so much fun, because this is going to be the rubber meets the road next year. Last season, William and I, when I just way out front said 6-0 all day long, and then 8-0, I'm like, there's 6-0 easy. Well, can't say that this season. And it's not because they're not as good or better team either, but that schedule, I talked about this a little bit with Andy. Wow. You start off with the Big Ten schedule with an Illinois team, although at home, is a team that is also shooting for a college football playoff spot, and that some people have in their top 10 right now. Drew Allard back, and very talented quarterback, a veteran man. They are going to be loaded. And then you follow that with those two road games at Iowa and Oregon. And man, that first half of the season, whoo, you got to be ready.
Yeah. And it's the best thing about playing Illinois, you got them at home. And that's a key component in that equation. I hate to say the must wins or must this or must that, but when you look at those two games, Illinois and Iowa, I do think that plays a part in telling us a little bit of what the season's going to be.
Question.
You know, because while they're going to be tough opponents, these are the ones and these are the games that Indiana has to win in order to be an upper echelon Big Ten team. And in years past, they haven't. They've come close, but they've never beat them. And that's the thing with Illinois and Iowa, per se, is that these are the teams that Indiana has to beat to become an upper echelon team within the Big Ten. And they're big challenges, no question. But I do think those are the two games for Indiana that are probably going to give us a pretty good insight for the rest of the year.
Well, and the Indiana-Illinois game is a great litmus test, because there's probably six teams in the Big Ten that will be, I can't say that. I mean, hell, I don't know what USC's going to be like. See, so it's so hard. But you know, Ohio State is going to be there. in the running. Penn State, of course, Michigan, Iowa, Oregon, Indiana. Now, I haven't even talked about USC. I don't know what they're going to be like. And who else may have greatly improved? We don't know. But the Illinois-Indiana game, boy, the winner of that game has a head start in the race to getting back to the college or getting to the college football playoff.
Oh yeah, no question.
I think whoever loses that game, it's an uphill climb from there, because you have a loss very early in the season with a lot of tough games yet to play.
Yeah, and we'll see if the true aspects of if it is a loss to a Illinois team that's a top 10 team, how much that hurts a team like Indiana. Now, Notre Dame loses to Northern Illinois, who was not even on the map last year, and it was like they never played them. And again, they showed it on the field. But my point being is we're going to see how that loss either hurts Indiana or it's looked upon as not really a bad loss in the schemes of the rankings and stuff. But I do like Indiana's position right now. I think Mendoza is the wild card in all of this. We got, analysts out there that are projecting him as a first round draft pick.
That's what something I was worried about. And actually, we'll go ahead and take a break. I've got to get to Bob Kravitz is up next. May get you back on in the final segment, and we'll talk about the possibility of Fernando Mendoza only being in Bloomington for a year. That would be a blow, but we've got more coming up. Coach Griff joined us on this segment. Bob Kravitz from BobKravitz.com up next. We're back with more right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Thursday, and that means a visit from Sir Bob Kravitz from BobKravitz.com. How are you, sir?
I am tremendous. I'm packing, man. I'm getting ready to go.
Yeah, you and me both, brother. We're going to different places. I am definitely not going to Jamaica, man.
I can't wait. We've been planning this trip for 5 years. I had no idea the Pacers would be on the cusp of the Eastern Conference Finals, but so it goes. I'll just find a sports bar at the resort and watch and not write.
Well, good for you. I'm heading to Oxford, Mississippi for my daughter's graduation at Ole Miss.
Congratulations.
As soon as I get off of here. Thank you, sir. How about these Pacers and this Eastern Conference, man? First of all, not just the Pacers. How about the Knicks?
How about the Knicks?
The Celtics? Can you imagine if the number ones and two seeds go down and we get an old-fashioned Pacers-Knicks Eastern Conference Finals?
That would be awesome. The Hicks versus the Knicks redux. That would be awesome. And I'll tell you what. I mean, I think they would have a real hard time with the Boston Celtics because of the matchups. But I think, I realize the Knicks are a lot healthier than they were last year when the Pacers played them. But I think the Pacers can knock off the Knicks and go to the NBA Finals. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, because I truly believe the Cleveland Cavaliers, if they can get healthy, can make a real series out of this. I think the Pacers, there's no way the Pacers are going to lose 4 out of 5. So I think they win the series based on their 2 wins in Cleveland. But it would not shock me if the games are close and if this goes 6. I think Cleveland's going to make a run here. They're too good. I mean, they won 64 games, for Christ's sake. You know, I think this is going to be a tough, long series before it's all said and done.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with you, because these games have been close, and both times the Pacers have won, it's been just unbelievable. Tyrese Haliburton, and it's not just Tyrese Haliburton. Aaron Nesmith made some unbelievable plays, but Tyrese Haliburton, to have been voted the most overrated player by your peers, boy, he's got to be. Uh, I I don't know if that's what that sign after he hit that last shot the other night when he it looked
that
like
was he was the, that was a, the old Cassell big balls onions yeah, it had nothing to do with being overrated, but he likes to do that kind of stuff. It's a little vulgar, but it's kind of funny.
You've got to have, but and they need a guy like that. But like I said, it's not just Halliburton. Aaron Nesmith made some
unbelievable. Been incredible.
Please, man, that rebound put back where he was behind the top of the key when he started off the missed free throw, and that was a killer.
I've been watching basketball for a very, very long time. Have you? And no. So have you. Have you ever seen a guy from the top of the key get into the lane and slam dunk a follow on a free throw?
No, I don't know how you can get through the traffic if people are blocking out. So obviously there was a lane and just he ran right through it.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, Nesmith has been a stud in this series. Nembhard, people don't talk about him. He had 13 assists because they were taking away Halliburton for the first three quarters, and that forced Nembhard to be the primary ball handler, and he was fantastic. So I mean, they're getting it from everybody. I mean, Obi Toppin's giving them some good minutes. I thought this would be a series where they would really miss Isaiah Jackson, and in the long term they may, but they got out-rebounded the first game, but second game they out-rebounded them. So that was my big fear coming into this round was the rebounding. And so far it hasn't hurt them.
The calls, every call went their way in that second game. And Brian says the NBA said that dunk should not have counted. Nesmith was beyond the three-point line too soon. He was definitely beyond the three-point line. I thought he just started at the top of the key.
About the top of the key. Yeah, somewhere in there. Then there was a 2-minute, I haven't read it yet. There was a 2-minute, review, last 2-minute review that the NBA always does. And I think they said that he was in the lane a little too quick
They were looking to see if the ball was in the cylinder and they ruled that no, it was outside the cylinder and it counted.
Clearly it was not. Yeah, I mean there were some mistakes made by the officials in the last few minutes, but look, if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, you're up 7 points with 40 seconds to go. I don't care how bad the refs screw you. You know, that's on you. That's a you problem.
So was it that again? Were they up 7 with 40 seconds to go again? Or is that the first time?
The first time they were up by 40 seconds. And the second time they were up, they were down with 47.9 seconds, I believe that was the number.
Because
the amazing thing, Jim, is that in the history of basketball, teams are 1-1600 and something when they're down 7 points or more in the fourth quarter or overtime with 45 seconds or less. Now yeah, they're Chris, 3-1600 because the Pacers have done it twice in 8 days.
Yeah, and Chris Denary sent me that. If it's at 40 seconds and under, it had never been done. It was 0 and like 1176 or something. So wild.
It is. This has been an absolutely. It's just been an amazing series so far. So are all the series. I mean, throughout the NBA, they've got some pretty good series with the road teams winning the first, five or six games. But I think the Pacers will win this thing eventually. I picked the Cavs in 7. Obviously, you have to be an idiot to not change your prediction. But I still think this thing's going to go at least 6.
I agree with that. I can't see them sweep. Not that they can't sweep them. It takes, you've got to get every call again. You've got to have some luck. You've got to be at the top of your game with every shot going down that needs to go. You can't miss free throws. Pascal Siakam's had some problems at the free throw lines, although although it has ended up helping the Pacers with him missing free throws.
Right. I mean, it's amazing to me that they got 5 points in the last 40 seconds off of two missed free throws. That's amazing. And they're one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. They're ranked 28th out of 30th in rebounds. And it was two massive rebounds that helped them win that basketball game. The one thing they're really going to have to clean up is the turnovers. They've had 16 and 17 in the first two games. And, you know, that's not usually a winning proposition. But if they clean that up, they ought to take one out of two back home at least. I think they would probably lose to Cleveland and probably put it away at home in game six.
Well, there's a lot going on in Indianapolis this month. The Indy 500 also right around the corner. The gates open up this Friday.
Right.
You've got a Grand Prix coming up as well. So all kinds of action going on out at the track.
Lots of racers and Pacers this year. And in fact, if the Pacers, well, you know this, if the Pacers make the Eastern Conference Finals, they would play game three, I believe. I think it's game three. It would be the same day as the Indy 500.
Yeah, that'll suck.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it'll hurt the attendance for either.
No, absolutely not. Now this is great fun. And, you know, I had thought about, you know, retiring at some point. Now this is just energizing me. I'm unfortunately going to miss games three through six because I'll be on a beach somewhere in Ocho Rios. But this has been great fun.
Today, it's the Indy NXT by Firestone drivers, Dennis Hauer, Lockie Hughes, Miles Rowe, Hallie Deegan, and Jack Wilman, William Miller are on a Zoom meeting. So the media will be meeting with those guys, and that'll be happening throughout the days as we get closer and closer. But the Grand Prix is kind of a cool event to have out there as part of the pre-festivities.
Yeah, no, I enjoy it. You know, sometimes I go and sometimes I don't, but yeah, I mean, it's great to have it out there. And, you know, it's that time of the year, man. How often I'll get out there, I don't know, because with the Pacers, I think the Pacers have stolen the attention of this town right now. So I'll probably be writing more Pacers than racers. But yeah, it's going to be a really, what a great month for the city of Indianapolis.
Oh, absolutely. Because when the Pacers are spread out, now you can check out things that are going on up in Speedway at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, because practice will be picking up. They've already had a little bit of practice, but when you've got the race day comes up on Saturday for this Grand Prix, and I've never been to that. And so that, how long is that on the road course?
A couple of hours.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. Watch the Indy road course. I mean, it gives you a great sense of the differences of these cars,
right,
and what they're able to do.
I prefer the Indy 500. I find that the Grand Prix tend to be a little on the dull side. Like whoever has the lead at the first turn tends to win the whole thing.
Hard to pass.
It's very hard to pass. I much prefer the Super Speedway in the Indianapolis 500. There's no question about that.
Well, it's definitely the premier event.
No doubt.
We're coming off of the Kentucky Derby, which went off last week, had a little weather, but it sure did not affect the race itself.
No, man, the race was great. Although I was rooting for journalism, man.
He had it, but
he had it.
It just that sovereignty was just too strong.
He was terrific. Yeah. I went to Churchill Downs once in my career. I had no idea. I know nothing about horse racing. Nothing. I just know that the fastest horse usually wins. But besides that, but it was a great atmosphere. You know, the ladies in the hats and everybody dressed to the nines and mint juleps. And it's one of those things, like, it's like the Indy 500. You don't need to be a motor sports fanatic to really enjoy the experience of the Indy 500. And the same is true with Churchill Downs.
The Indianapolis 500 is just an event beyond events. They're so different, the Derby and Indy 500. The Derby is an event, but it's about dressing up and, you know, smoking cigars and this, that. Indy, baby, it's about racing.
It's about racing.
Being at Indianapolis. It's about being at this iconic event, the largest sporting event in all of planet Earth.
Yes. Yeah, and they're gonna sell out, or at least come close to a sellout. And once again, we're gonna play that annual game we play. Will they be lifting the blackout? And who knows? I mean, we're still a couple of weeks away, but if they sell out, they better lift that blackout. It doesn't make the radio people happy, but I'm not real concerned with their well-being.
You know, even if I were watching on TV and they did lift the blackout, I would still do like a lot of Indiana basketball fans do and turn the TV down and turn on the radio network with Chris Denari and turn four, because I love listening to the radio call as they go from the front stretch to turn one into the turn two guy, into the turn three guy, into turn four, and then switch back. I love that style. It just adds to the race.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've listened to it. Like, when I go to the race, I generally listen to the radio, and it's astonishing the job that they do. I mean, all those guys, Query and Denari and everybody else, do a phenomenal job on race day.
Well, it's also fast. It happens so fast, and it's coming at you now. You don't have time to think. You just have to be able to react.
Absolutely.
Kind of like being an Indy race car driver.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What about Newgarden? Shot at getting three in a row.
Three in a row. He's gotten off to a pretty decent start this year, and I see no reason why he can't get three in a row. I mean, there's a lot of good storylines out there, but
all kinds of them. I think haven't won the race. Pato O'Ward, up and comers. Kyle Larson
doing the double.
Indy and NASCAR going to Charlotte. If things work out, last year he got rained out in Charlotte when he got down there. But
it'll
be interesting. He had a good run last year, and it's going to be interesting to see how he does in the race.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, where did he finish last year? Do you remember?
You know what? I want to say sixth, but
yeah,
I don't know why.
I'm going top 10. I know that.
Yeah, I'm thinking sixth place. And
okay, not bad.
But no, he had a good run going. So
good.
Looking forward to that. Where are you going in Jamaica, man?
I'm going to Ocho Rios. Rios. We're staying in a resort. All the food and drink you can possibly stuff in your belly. Lots of pools and beaches and all kinds of stuff that's illegal. And we'll have a great time.
I have no doubts. Bob Kravitz always has a good time, and we always have a good time with Bob Kravitz. Make sure you're going to bobkravitz.com. It's going to be a little blank for a week, but that gives you time to catch up, people.
Exactly,
gives you time to catch up on all the things.
I'll be back for the Eastern Conference Finals.
Perfect, boy. That could be quite entertaining. I'm pulling for the Pacers and the Knicks.
Oh, me too. Me too. I'm not sold on the Knicks winning this series. I believe the Pacers will win the series. They'll have some difficulties especially if Hunter and some of those guys come back. But I still think, you know, never underestimate the heart of a champion. And it would not shock me if Boston goes in there and wins a couple.
Well, sir. Oh, absolutely. I would be shocked if they didn't do something here. So enjoy it, brother. Have a good one. Safe travels.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Rastafari.
We'll miss you when you're ganja, man.
Yeah, there'll be some of that.
We'll miss you when you're ganja. Wow, right, Bob Kravitz from BobKravitz.com joining us here on Indiana Sports Speed Radio. More coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios right after this. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Thursday. Glad to have you along for the ride. Coach Griff back with us. Just finished up with Bob Kravitz. And, man, it's you think it's going to start getting quiet with recruiting, but, man, Indiana has still just been locking them down. And, like I said earlier, it's been quite impressive to see what they've been able to do and the moves that they're able to make. The guys are starting to get in. The level of players that will be coming in, obviously, is going to continue to get higher and higher. The fact that you're landing Kazmir Hicks, the number one player in the state, then you're looking at a guy who's the number one linebacker in the state. There's many others from the Indianapolis area that they are in on as well. So the talent level is going to continue to climb at Indiana. And another thing we've seen is they've done a good job of keeping guys, not losing them to the
point. Yeah. The other thing is they've got a really good shot of the wide receiver up here at my alma mater. Guilford is a wide receiver. He's the top talent. Probably going to come down to Indiana and Ohio State. And from what I'm understanding is things are looking good for Indiana with him. So that would be another big time pickup for Indiana in the recruiting trail. So yeah, you know, the biggest thing about commitments is right now these are just verbals. You still have to recruit these kids all the way up to the day they sign because there's so many things going on. You've got to make sure that you're continually in contact with things change on a dime.
I think the basketball program learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah. Because the money factor that's always involved in this. You know, I think they lost the McCorder kid, the quarterback from Georgia, because of that, because Mississippi State, you know, I think really wanted him. So I think they, you know, put money in front of him that was too good to turn down. So, you know, that's the nice thing about it. Yes, you've got really good group of commitments as of now, up to 8, I believe, total. And you're still trying to find that next gym somewhere else. And that's what the month of May is really going to be utilized for, with the coaches out on the road, not only checking in on recruits from this next recruiting class, but also starting laying the foundation for the 27 class, which they have made several verbal offers to already on the recruiting trail. So it's an ongoing process. You got to get this group of kids to December to get them signed on that early signing period. Then we can all celebrate a recruiting class that, as of right now, looks to be a top tier class for Indiana.
Well, definitely. And that's not something that fans are accustomed to, but something they should probably get used to, because that's going to be the case going forward. As long as at least Kurt Cignetti has it going on, he knows what he's doing. He has the plan. He's done it before. He's been doing it for a long time. And success breeds success. Winning breeds winning. Guys want to win, and they want to go where they can win, where they can play and they can win and be developed. Those three things. And yeah, they want to get paid, but of course that's everybody wants to get paid. But they want to be developed. They want to play and they want to win.
Well, it's like everything, you know, winning cures all. It cures all on many fronts, including recruiting, because kids ultimately decide that, hey, you've got a winning program. I want to look at it, be a part of it. And we've always said, if you can get a recruit on campus with mom and dad, your chances of getting that recruit go way up. And I don't think there's been one kid that Indiana has had on campus that hasn't come away with a different opinion of what they had of Indiana prior to arriving on campus. And that is the case a lot of times, because Indiana, Bloomington sells itself, and academically speaking, you know, in all facets of a young man's life, academically, socially, all those things, when they get them on campus, they change a lot of kids' minds in their perception of what Indiana is to what Indiana really is now with Coach Cignetti and how he runs the program. And a kid comes away, I want to be a part of it. And that's what you're seeing with some of these recruits.
Absolutely. I think that that's building. You can see the program being built. Mm-hmm. And as I said, with them so far not having lost many guys to the portal, that's unusual, and it shows that they want to stay here. But I think partly is they're not recruiting these five-star big name guys, which I don't know though if Fernando Mendoza fits into that category or not. Maybe he does, but so you're less likely to lose them. Maybe it's easier to keep them, maybe to work with them. But in the segment previous, when you were with us, Fernando Mendoza, you know, he's got 2 years of eligibility, but there's no guarantee you he's going to be here for those 2 years. If no. He has a season like he had last year, but better with a better team, man, Indiana could lose him to the NFL.
Well, yeah, that's the good and bad of it. You know, with a kid of the caliber that Fernando is, and you're right, if he comes in and lights it up, and there is the potential that he could be a first round or in some cases even a second round draft pick, it would be very hard to keep him in Bloomington. And that's why it's so important that you are continuing to get Alberto repetitions in the system, and why it's also important that you're building underneath it, because that is the key component at the quarterback position, is that really good ones leave for the NFL, and you've got to have that next guy ready to step in and be as good as, if not better than, the guy that just left. And you know, that's what you see at guys like at Ohio State and Michigan. You know, they've got guys there that ultimately will leave, and you got to have somebody in the wings ready to roll, because that position is so critical. Now, I do think they've got that with Alberto in the wings, but they're going to have that next one or two behind him. We'll see where Tyler Cherry is after he, you know, whether he gets to come back into the fold after this season. That will be a key component with everything. Not good that the kid's going to lose an entire year, because it's an entire year of development, but we'll have to see there. But that's why the quarterback is so important in your recruiting process, that you are always thinking one to two steps ahead of where you currently are.
Yeah, well, and that's what great head coaches do. And that's partly why I think Indiana is in the position that they're in right now in a recruiting standpoint, besides the fact that the staff is doing a tremendous job, first of mm-hmm. all, every one of these position coaches. But Kurt Cignetti has a plan. He understands what that plan is. And that plan includes right down to recruiting. And he can explain that to these guys, to these potential players, potential recruits, what their role is going to be. And he is no nonsense. I think they like that. I think you can feel the no nonsense. Right. And but you can also feel that he knows what he's doing, that you're following somebody that is going to lead you.
Yeah. going back to your early assessment of keeping kids in the program, look, a kid that's in Indiana's program, most kids or all kids want to feel valued in the program. They want to feel that they're a part of it. They want to feel that they're, you know, a part of a family, so to speak. And there's one thing that I think they've done very well of, and this is one thing that I always say, if you got a lot of kids leaving, there's probably something internally wrong with your group of coaches, because I do think these kids feel their value within Cignetti's program. And I think the assistant coaches and Coach Cignetti make them feel their value. The no nonsense approach that you have pointed out. Yes. They want the straight answer. They don't want no BS. They want, you know, what is my status? Where do I fit? How do I get better, both on and off the field? And I think they're able to communicate that effectively, at the same time being able to tell that kid that they really appreciate him. And more importantly, they love him. You know, they want him to be around. And when a kid has that feeling of belonging, they don't want to leave that. You know, that the grass is not always greener on the other side. And I think that's what you're seeing.
I agree, but I also, and to add to that, I think that because they see they are a part of something. They are a part of something that has never happened, getting a lot of attention. You go someplace else, you may just kind of get lost in the right. In the shuffle, and you know, whatevs.
Absolutely. And kids always want to be a part of something that's bigger than themselves, and seeing a program that's doing things that have never been done to the extent that they're doing them, they want to be a part of that. They want to be a part of making a mark on Indiana's program. You know, they want to be a part to be able to say 20 years from now, I was a part of the turnaround. And that's, you know, says a lot right there with it. When you get these kids on campus, especially the big time kids, that they're giving Indiana a look, it's because they see what's going on and they want to be a part of it. Simple as that.
Yes, it is, man. And it is simple as this. Has been another fun day, brother. As always, appreciate you. Plenty of football talk for those that don't think we do it enough. We'll be bringing it to you all the time, especially and when we get closer to football season.
Yeah, and I'll be on tonight. Yeah, and I'll be on tonight, 7:30.
Hoosier tailgate. You can catch that at thehoosier.com as well on 3. Make sure you're going to thehoosier.com on 3. Get a subscription. Appreciate you, my friend.
You got it, partner.
Big thanks to Andy Staples as well. Big fun day. Most importantly, thanks to each and every one of you. Without you, no reason for us to be here. We're back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios tomorrow, mobile unit. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. Go out and have yourselves a great day. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.